News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. The Biden administration has upheld a Trump-era rejection of nearly all significant Chinese maritime claims in the South China Sea. The administration also warned China that any attack on the Philippines in the Flashpoint region would draw a U.S. response under a mutual defense treaty. The stern message came in a statement released late Sunday ahead of this week's fifth anniversary of an international tribunal ruling in favor of the Philippines against China's maritime claims around the Spratly Islands and neighboring reefs and shoals. Authorities searching for victims of a deadly collapse in Florida say they hope to conclude their painstaking work in the coming weeks as a team of first responders from Israel departed the site. The mayor, Daniela Levine-Cava, said Sunday that 90 deaths have now been confirmed. Among them are 71 bodies that have been positively identified, and their next of kin has been notified. Some 31 people remain missing. Crews continue to search the remaining pile of rubble, peeling layer after layer of debris in search of the bodies. The Miami-Dade County Fire Chief said that it was uncertain when recovery operations would be completed. Pfizer says it plans to meet with top U.S. health officials Monday to discuss the drug maker's request for federal authorization of a third dose of its COVID-19 vaccine. Its statement comes as U.S. President Joe Biden's chief medical advisor acknowledged that in its entirely conceivable, mainly likely, that booster shots will be needed in the coming months. Last week, Pfizer asserted that booster shots would be needed within 12 months, drawing rebuttal from U.S. health officials saying booster shots were not needed at this time. More at VOAnews.com. This is VOA News. A U.S. lawyer says an American citizen and former top aide to Jordan's King Abdullah II has alleged he was tortured in Jordanian detention and fears for his life. The lawyer spoke on the eve of a verdict in the high-profile sedition trial linked to a rare public rift in Jordan's royal family. Prosecutor's office at Jordan State Security Court denied that the defendant was mistreated or that his trial was unfair. The allegations of mistreatment were raised just days before Jordan's King was to become the first Arab leader to meet with President Joe Biden at the White House on July 19th. Thousands of Cubans have marched on Havana's Malecon Promenade and elsewhere on the island to protest food shortages and high prices in the coronavirus crisis. Sunday's outpouring was one of the biggest anti-government demonstrations in memory. Many young people took part in the afternoon protests in the capital, which disrupted traffic until police moved in after several hours and broke up the march when a few protesters threw rocks. Cuba is going through its worst economic crisis in decades, along the resurgence of coronavirus cases, and protesters chanted freedom, enough, and united. People standing on many balconies in the central Havana neighborhood applauded the protesters passing by. Others joined in at the march. Several thousand people have protested in front of the Georgian parliament, demanding the ex-Soviet nation's prime minister resign over the death of a journalist who was attacked and beaten earlier this week by anti-LGBT protesters. The cameraman was found dead in his home by his mother earlier on Sunday, according to the TV Pervelli channel that he worked for. He was one of several dozen journalists attacked last week on Monday by opponents of an LGBT march that had been scheduled to take place that day in the Georgian capital. According to media reports, he sustained multiple injuries and had to undergo surgery, but was discharged from a hospital Thursday. Cause of his death was not immediately clear. Israel's Supreme Court has cleared the way for same-sex couples to have children through surrogate mothers, a move hailed by lawmakers and activists as a win for LGBTQ rights. The court last year ruled that an existing surrogacy law that expanded access to single women but excluded gay couples was unlawful. At the time, it gave the government a year to draw up a new law, but on Sunday it said the state had not amended the law in time. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington. Today is Monday, July the 12th, and here are some of the stories we are covering for you this morning. At least 62 people were arrested after violent riots erupted in two South African provinces against the imprisonment of former President Jacob Zuma, with supporters blocking roads and looting shops.
These acts are endangering the lives of people and damaging our efforts to rebuild the economy.
That is South African President Cyril Ramaphosa addressing the nation. And internet users and activists in Uganda have welcomed the government decision to scrap a tax on social media.
OTT, which was introduced in 2018, made my life very difficult because I could not access the information about what is going on within my own country.
Ugandan university student Molly Kabamori in Kampala, Uganda, and the Minister of Health in Malawi holds a survey to find out the efficacy of the AstraZeneca vaccine in fighting the coronavirus. We have those stories plus Samson Omale's sports coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Please stay tuned. And for our top story, we start off in South Africa, where the police in the country have said that they have arrested 62 people after violent riots erupted in two South African provinces. The protests against the imprisonment of former President Jacob Zuma blocked roads and highways as rioters looted shops and engaged in other forms of violence. The former president started serving a 15-month sentence for contempt of court last week. He was imprisoned for defying a court order to testify before a state inquiry into allegations of corruption during his term as president from 2009 to 2018. Addressing the nation, President Cyril Ramaphosa warned those taking part in the violent protests that the government will not tolerate any acts of criminality.
These acts are endangering the lives of people and damaging our efforts to rebuild the economy. While there are those who may be hurt and angry at this moment, there can never be any justification whatsoever for anybody to embark on violent and disruptive actions that negatively affect the rights of others.
President Ramaphosa warned that law enforcement was ready to respond to those engaging in violence.
Let us be clear, as a nation, that we will not tolerate any acts of criminality. We will not tolerate any acts of vandalism. Those who are involved in acts of violence will be arrested and prosecuted.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa. Meanwhile, the son of jailed former South African President Jacob Zuma says that he lost faith in the country's judicial system, telling VOA's Peter Clotty that powerful enemies had conspired to use the judiciary in South Africa to jail his father.
The judiciary themselves have broken the rights that they are supposed to protect. They've told President Zuma that he has no right to remain silent in the commission of inquiry. Whereas our constitution provides and protects that we have the right to remain silent. The very same judiciary is the one that disrespected an application that was done in between. Now, why should we respect it? Because clearly it does not respect us. So what we are saying is, because they do not respect us, why should we respect them? We might as well fight them back.
Do you have faith in the South Africa judicial system and its independence?
It's from Tuesday when they took the decision. In fact, it's from when they took the decision to convict Mr. Shaburi Sheikh. I lost confidence in them. So I do not have faith in the judicial system of South Africa, and I think we need to rejuvenate it. So I'm calling upon all South Africans to close down the country and we go to war.
What is your message to the people of South Africa in the face of your dad or the former president handing himself over to the authorities to begin the 15-month jail sentence?
Him handing himself over is a mere process. It's a mere formality. We are going to disregard that. It's a mere process. He handed himself over. It's a mere process that allow party will continue with the struggle on the ground.
That was Edward Zuma, son to former South African President Jacob Zuma. He was speaking to VOA's Peter Clotty. In Malawi, a survey by the Minister of Health to help ascertain the efficacy of AstraZeneca vaccine has shown its effectiveness in fighting the coronavirus. The survey was based on current hospital admissions of COVID-19 patients across the country. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
And the preliminary results of the findings released Saturday were based on COVID-19 admissions between June 26 and July 8 of this year. These results show that over 80% of 227 COVID-19 patients admitted during the period were those not vaccinated, and those who have only had one AstraZeneca jab were 12%, while those fully vaccinated only accounted for 4%. Dr. Charles Mansambo is the secretary for the Ministry of Health. He says it is still too early to measure the effectiveness of the AstraZeneca vaccine based on these findings.
We're still vaccinating more, and presently our vaccination status is still low. But what we found so far is that the majority of those that are coming in are those that were not vaccinated.
However, he says the findings would help end fears and doubts some Malawians had over the vaccine, which prevented them from getting vaccinated. Malawi has currently vaccinated about 400,000 people of 11 million needed to reach the herd immunity.
So we encourage more people to come for vaccination, because obviously this is strongly putting a case for vaccination. So I encourage your citizens, make sure that they come for vaccination.
In May, Malawi destroyed about 20,000 doses of AstraZeneca vaccine, which had expired. The incineration was largely because many Malawians were reluctant to be vaccinated over concerns on the vaccine's safety and efficacy. Lydia Kamwana, a baker in Blantyre, said the survey is a wake-up call to her.
I haven't been vaccinated. I really wanted to go for the jab, but then I was so scared. And when I saw those findings, the results are making sense, and I'm convinced I will get the jab once the vaccines is in stock.
Maziko Matemba is the National Community Ambassador for Health in Malawi. He welcomes the survey findings, but he says the government is now responsible to ensure that it has enough vaccine for its people.
As you know, this is only maybe one or less than 1% of the population who have been vaccinated. So the major or the bigger population is not well vaccinated.
However, Mansambo said Malawi is expected to receive a donation of 192,000 doses of AstraZeneca vaccines to restock its vaccination centers, which ran out of vaccine mid-June. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
And let's go to East Africa in Uganda, where internet users and activists in the country have welcomed the government's decision to scrap a tax on social media, commonly known as OTT. Ugandans are, however, complaining about another tax levy imposed on data, saying it will make it even more expensive for internet users. And meanwhile, Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has instructed security personnel to arrest people he says misuse social media sites. Mugume Davis Rwakarinji reports from Kampala.
Effective July, internet users in Uganda are not subjected to pay over-the-top or OTT tax after the government introduced a 12% levy on data. Ugandan government introduced the controversial OTT tax in 2018 to regulate social media users. Social media users were required to pay a monthly fee of 6,000 Uganda shillings or some $2 in order to access Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, among other social media sites. From this, the government also hoped to generate some 486 billion Uganda shillings, about $129 million. Student Moye Kavamori says she depended on internet for research and communicate with her family, but at times she would fail to communicate because of lack of money to pay OTT tax.
OTT, which was introduced in 2018, made my life very difficult because I could not access the information about what is going on within my own country, and I could not get to know what is going on outside countries. The removal of OTT has not changed anything because they have introduced that taxi on internet data.
But some internet users, including government officials, have been bypassing OTT by using virtual private networks or VPN to access social media sites. By introducing a 12% tax on data, Ugandans will pay up to 30% on data, factoring in the existing 18% value-added tax, or VAT. Internet activist Dorothy Mukasa, who heads NGO Unwanted Witness, calls the new tax unnecessary, describing it as moving from frying pan to the fire.
People are very poor. People do not have even what to eat, you know. They're looking up to government for relief. And then there's an increment on data. A time when everybody is using internet to be able to connect to friends, to be able to earn a living, to be able to stay safe, to be able to get remedies, to be able to get solutions, you know, to be able to get comfort.
Julius Mukunda, the head of Civil Society Budget Advocacy Group, says such a tax will have negative effects on the economy.
During this lockdown, during these challenging times when everybody is trying to stay alone, internet is your next buddy, because you use it to communicate socially, but also for our youth, and especially some of the businesses that have gone online rely on internet to conduct businesses. So a number of taxes such as this definitely hinder progress in terms of us to achieve the development we want.
Relatedly, Ugandan President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni has tasked security officials to arrest people involved in what he calls misuse of internet.
Now, the other day when I went to side of Bombo to lay a foundation of stone, and people were looking really because they thought they had been told by social media that Museveni is dead or something like that. So the security service needs also to solve that problem. I need to check with them to locate quickly the one who tells such a story, because you waste people's time. They should go for you. They should go for you. They should locate you where you are and we'll go for you. And if you are in Europe, then we denounce you. Say, go to hell.
Telecommunication companies have not yet raised the cost of data following the new tax. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinjini, Kampala, Uganda.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Zunganyi. Gambia's President Adama Barrow has been briefing the nation on what he called the preliminary findings of the nation's recent storm disaster, which killed 10 people, many injured, and displaced hundreds of people. Properties worth millions of the Gambian currency, Dalasi, were also destroyed during the heavy windstorm. Reporter Pande Rimbai has been monitoring developments, and he now reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
The disaster, the force of its kind, according to President Barrow, was characterized by thunderstorms accompanied by lightning and heavy winds that downed electric poles, destroyed buildings, uprooted trees, lit up streets and communities with debris. The president had earlier visited 10 communities in the North Bank region of the Gambia to assess the level of the storm damage. In a televised state address over the weekend, President Barrow describes the magnitude of the damage caused by the storm.
Based on an NDMA preliminary assessment report, the storm destroyed property worth millions of dollars and injured many people, apart from claiming 10 lives. I appeal to all citizens and residents, all corporate bodies, and our development partners to work with the NDMA on disaster risk mechanisms and support the victims.
Storm victims are in dire need of help. They are currently struggling with lack of shelter, food, and clothing. Their only hope for bailout rests on the government and the private sector.
On behalf of the government and the entire nation, I commiserate with all those affected directly or indirectly. In particular, I extend heartfelt condolences to the bereaved families for the sad loss of lives. And I pray for solace for those who suffer damage to property. In the same vein, I pray for the speedy recovery of all those injured and their loved ones who perish in the storm to rest in eternal peace.
With a population of about 3 million people, the Gambia heavily depends on agriculture to feed its people. Now that the storm has torn communities apart, there is little hope among victims to recover from such a tragedy. The limited food that they had in stock has been destroyed by the storm. President Barrow again.
Working with the National Disaster Agency, NDMA, and the relevant line institutions, the government has activated the country's emergency preparedness and response plan. The National Disaster Management Agency staff deployed around the country are working tirelessly to assess the full extent of the damage, and they are instituting measures to mitigate the effect of this natural disaster.
Observers have expressed concern about what they call poor housing planning, coupled with old building structures, which they say have contributed to the devastating impact of the tragedy.
It is also worth noting that we can improve environmental sanitation by maintaining waterways clear of debris and garbage. My government will urge the Department of Physical Planning to learn lessons from the poor planning of all settlements and in the future plan new communities better, taking account of waterways and proper drainage systems.
Meanwhile, as displaced families are trying to repair their damaged houses, prices for cement and corrugate have skyrocketed. Business owners have been accused of capitalizing on the storm disaster to increase prices. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
The Kenya National Authority for the Campaign Against Alcohol and Drug Abuse says that a high number of primary and secondary school students are abusing drugs amid safety and health concerns in the institutions of learning. The Kenyan Authority says that most students are exposed to drugs both at home and in school, with statistics reporting increased exposure from parents. Maureen Ojambo reports from Milwaukee.
The Kenya's Ministry of Education is accusing parents of absconding their role in ensuring children live in a drug-free environment. Education Cabinet Secretary George Magoha said that most parents use drug substance before their children and hence influencing the young generation.
That a child will not do what you say. A child will do what you do. So in order for us to get through to the bottom of this animal, there is need for the parents of the children, first of all, to accept that they are squarely responsible for what is happening to their children as far as alcohol and drug abuse are concerned.
In a survey conducted by the National Authority for Campaign Against Alcohol and Drug Abuse in Kenya on secondary schools, at least 23.4% of students have used alcohol. 17% have used miraa, 16.1% used prescription drugs, 14.4% of them used tobacco, 1.2% heroin, 2.7% cannabis, and 1.1% of the students used cocaine. Emily Anyango is a mother to a 15-year-old boy. The boy is addicted to drugs, and the situation escalated from last year. And the teenager has since been in and out of school and sometimes does not show up at home at all.
My son started using drugs when he was in class 8, that is 2018. And during that time, I did not notice because I was very busy working. Most of the time, I would find him asleep or maybe he didn't even come home at all. In 2020, March. That's the corona time. That's when I discovered that I thought he was using something because he was a bit different.
Emily says the government has failed parents since most drug peddlers run their businesses within the community.
The government, I think, has really failed for us as parents. But when they come from school, we expect that the government is doing their part as in taking care of the drug peddlers and all that. And that doesn't happen much because the drugs are locally available. Like every 10 steps, you can easily access the drugs.
In another survey, the primary schools are also in a dire situation. Kenya's Interior Principal Secretary Karanja Kibicho said that at least 20.2% of primary school children have used drugs.
20.2% of primary school pupils had used at least one drug or substance in their lifetime. In addition, the report outlined that the average lowest age of onset to drugs and substance abuse is 4 years, and the median age for the initiation is 11 years, as 29% of the pupils reported that they get drugs from shops or kiosks near their schools.
A national survey of the general population revealed that alcohol is the most abused substance, with 12.2% of persons aged between 15 and 65 years being active users. The report has advocated the need to enforce measures towards lowering access and availability of drugs and substance abuse to school-going children. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
And now it's time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and with that we go to Abuja, Nigeria, where Samson O'Malley is reporting. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, Jackson. We begin the sports in Las Vegas, where the Nigerian national men's basketball team recorded an historic victory in an exhibition match against the USA team ahead of the Tokyo 2020 Olympic Games. The D-Tigers beat the USA team by 90 to 87 points on Saturday night. The Americans had not lost in 39 games in their last three Olympic seasons, including pre-Olympic exhibitions, making this defeat even more embarrassing. In his post-game comments, the Tigers of Nigeria head coach Michael Brown and the Tigers guard Gabby Vincent were excited over their victory.
It's a good win for us. You know, I don't think any African team has been able to beat USA basketball in an exhibition game or a real game, you know. And so to try to get a little bit of momentum, not just for our group, because our group has worked extremely hard over the last couple of weeks, but to try to get a little bit of momentum for Nigeria, for the continent of Africa, because we feel like we represent more than just Nigerian, really for all of Black people around the world.
We understand it is an exhibition. We understand it's not our ultimate goal was to beat USA in this exhibition, it's to medal in Tokyo, and our eyes are still set on that.
The Tigers, ranked 22nd by FIBA, will continue their preparations for the Tokyo Games with another exhibition game against Argentina later today in Las Vegas. In rugby news, the Kenyan national under-20 rugby team are the 2021 Rugby Africa Under-20 Bathins Cup champions. The team retained the title they won in 2019 after a narrow 21-20 win over a resilient Madagascar side in a tight match played at Nyayo Stadium on Sunday. Kenyan Deputy President Williams Ruto was one of the spectators.
And with your determination and commitment, we believe that we will find ourselves in the World Cup for the first time. You have our support, you have our prayers, you have our commitment. Do us and make us proud.
In football news, 10-man Raja Club Athletic held their nerves to clinch their second Toto CAF Confederations Cup title after beating Algerian side JS Kabylie 2-1 in an entertaining final played in Cotonou, Benin Republic on Saturday. Sofiane Rahimi and Ben Malango scored for Raja within the first quarter of an hour of the game to put them in the driver's seat. However, Kabylie came back stronger in the second half with Mohamed Zakaria halving the deficit just moment into the second half. Raja were reduced to 10 men in the 62nd minute when Omar Aljuni was sent off for a high boot, but the Moroccan side held on to ensure they clinched the victory and their second Confederations Cup title. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson, and have a great week ahead. And that's it for this Monday, July 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good week ahead, Africa.